For the week of December 21st, 2020, this is Showbiz Sandbox, episode 522, the podcast that brings you all the dirt on the news-making headlines around the entertainment world. In Los Angeles, I'm Jay Sperling Reich.
And in Atlanta, Georgia, I'm Michael Giltz.
You're in Atlanta, Georgia?
I am indeed.
Friends are you there to vote? Are you going to vote early and often? Remember, vote more than once if you can. And apparently, according to some people you listen to, you can vote like 300, 400, 500 times.
I am voting my ass off.
Oh, I get it. Voting my ass off because Ossoff is the last name of one of the people running, for those of you outside the United States.
That's correct. I'm in Atlanta. Friends of mine are down in Florida with their family, with their mother that they are in a bubble with, and they're spending time there. So I'm staying at their empty house here in Atlanta for a little break and visiting with my friend, another friend who lives in Atlanta, outdoors. So we're spending some outdoor time together, eating outside, spending a little time, a little socially distanced, but having some fun. And I'm getting a little break here. And that's great. I'll head back to Birmingham, Alabama tonight for the holidays. And speaking of holidays, deck the halls with about... Isn't this the episode where we finally sing?
This is not the musical episode.
Well, I've got musical songs for every section of our show. Like worldwide box office, movie theaters are singing Blue Christmas to their theater goers. They're singing, "I'll have a blue Christmas without you," right? The U.S. relief bill, $15 billion, maybe, for cinemas and live venues. Christmas is coming. The goose is getting fat. Right?
Wow.
How about award season? Movie stars and directors, they're thinking about Oscar and they're singing to Oscar, "All I want for Christmas is you." Come on, we can do it.
Oh, my God. I have to say, ladies and gentlemen of the world, I had no idea that this is how our show would start, our program would start today. None at all.
It may be the way our show ends.
That's very true.
So since we're not going to sing the episode, we are going to talk about stuff. What stuff are we going to talk about?
Well, this week on Showbiz Sandbox, you've kind of mentioned some of the things already. We are saying goodbye and good riddance to 2020. So
there, humbug.
Yeah, that's it. We're done. Short episode. No, just kidding. We're going to see you next year. Well, we do have some stories to discuss before we start planning a Zoom holiday with family and friends. Happy belated Hanukkah, everybody, by the way. And unless you're Smokey Robinson, in which case it's Happy Chinooka. Okay. I think, and by the way, search Saturday Night Live.
You mean Chrismica?
Chrismica? No. He actually, I guess, was seen, I don't know, or there was a meme going around where Smokey Robinson called Hanukkah Chinooka.
Oh, you mean mispronounced. Oh, that's obnoxious. Don't do that. That's okay. If somebody's trying to repeat a phrase that they're not familiar with in another language or, let's not mock that.
Well, then call Saturday Night Live. They had a whole skit on it.
Well, that's their job, to not be funny.
Well, in any case, news is happening. The Congress finally passed a COVID relief bill, or at least it's very close to passing. They did that once Republicans stopped blocking it like a Scrooge in A Christmas Carol. You see what I did there? Kind of brought it back to, some $15 billion will go to small live venues and movie theater chains.
Sort of.
We'll talk about that later. So I guess technically good news. Mm-hmm. We are also launching into award season with the New York and LA film critics weighing in on their picks for the best films of the year. The Academy Museum has been delayed again. Nielsen is getting serious about changing how they come up with TV ratings, and reboots and remakes are getting out of hand. On Inside Baseball, we'll share, I guess it's good news, between CAA and the Writers Guild, who have come to an agreement, which means that William Morris Endeavor can't be too far behind. Come on, people, give us some more good news before 2020 is over. One more good story. Of course, during Big Deal or Big Whoop, we'll discuss some of the week's top headlines. But first, as always, we turn it over to entertainment journalist extraordinaire Michael Giltz to fill us in on last week's box office.
Apparently, a horchata is not the best thing to drink when you're getting ready to do your podcast. That little rice, milk, cinnamon drink, it's getting a little in my throat. I had to turn off the mic to cough. Anyway, we're looking at box office around the world. I'm not feeling good about our numbers this week. It's a bit of a mess. We pulled from what we could. The usual website that I go to for Chinese box office, the Entertainment Group or Ent Group, CN, it's a mess. They're not showing anything. And when I try to go to the English section where they show box office, it's showing me all sorts of weird stuff, most of it in Chinese. So not good. I don't know what's happening there. But we pieced together from the stuff that opened last week and the info we have from Billboard from Variety and Hollywood Reporter and Deadline and did the best we could. As far as we know, the number one movie around the world is Wonder Woman, 1984. It opened to $38 million. That's a good opening for the week. It's good in context, sort of, but it's nowhere near as big as it should have been because it really fell down in China. Nobody's quite sure why. There's lots of theories. Maybe it'll hold really well because there were other mitigating factors. One of the mitigating factors is The Rescue. That's a Chinese action drama from director Dante Lam. It cost about $90 million to make, and it did not have a great week either. It opened to about $36 million. This is the third in a trilogy that focuses on government personnel. The first one was Operation Mekong, which focused on the police. That was followed by Operation Red Sea, which focused on the Navy. And now this one focuses on, I forget what this kind of rescue group is called. They seem more like the Coast Guard or something.
Yeah.
But why didn't they call it Operation Rescue? Like, why did they drop Operation from the title? I mean, the first two said Operation. I think that alone can be a really, you know, don't confuse people. Let them know what you're doing. So maybe the title alone wasn't very helpful. But that opened a little weakly. Wonder Woman opened a little weakly. Still,
in fact, in China, it's been the lowest grossing pre-Christmas weekend since 2014. And ironically, I just clicked on the story from Variety, which talks about this, and their server is down.
Wow. Yeah. So yes, China box office has been one of the few bright spots along with Japan and to a lesser degree, Korea. Europe has been closing down and opening up and closing down. China was the best success story, but it's hitting a bit of a wall right now. So we'll have to see what's happening there.
Would you call it a great wall? Because it's China. See what I did there?
Nonetheless, that's where the action is happening. And the third movie on the list is also from China. It's the comedy Bath Buddy. That made another $21 million this week. So that was a pretty great hold. Last week, it made about $27 million. This week, it made $21 million. So that's at $48 million and counting. Right below that is Japan's big hit, Demon Slayer, the movie Infinity Train. That made another $11 million around the world. It's at $325 million. We don't know where it's at in Japan and whether it passed Spirited Away by Hayao Miyazaki to become the highest grossing film of all time in Japan, but that's going to happen any minute now, certainly this week, if it hasn't happened already.
You like the way that, like, the Spirited Away, Hayao Miyazaki's company said, oh, wait, we have this just in. We recalculated the gross. And just before, they're like, here's our actual. I'm like, wait a second. You know, you can't. No. You're now that's very Trumpian of you. You can't go backwards.
Well, right below that is another movie, animated film. This one from the U.S., The Croods, A New Age, starring the voice of Nicolas Cage. $9 million it made this week. It's at $85 million worldwide. Back to China. The End of Endless Love, a romance that made another $8 million. That's at the $50 million mark. Caught in Time, a crime drama. That's at $82 million worldwide, thanks to $7 million it made this week. A Russian film opened up in China. This is called T-34. It's a film centered on people in a Russian tank. That's a tank type, T-34. Not quite sure what it made this week. I think it made about $4 million. It's at $38 million worldwide. Then there's Soul Snatcher. This is a Chinese period fantasy. Unlike Bath Buddy, which is doing really well, and probably The End of Endless Love based on how much it costs to make, and Caught in Time, this one is not a success story. It made $2 million this week. It's falling hard and fast. It's at $28 million and counting. Another Japanese film has opened up in China. This was Doraemon, which we talked about last week. And we're talking about this week down in the Big Deal Big Whoop. It made $2 million and it's at $40 million and counting. That includes the grosses it made previously in Japan. So our numbers are different from last week. It made about $2 million this week in China. It has grossed $40 million worldwide. And right below that is director Zhang Yimou, is one of China's great directors. His new film set in the Cultural Revolution, that's been playing in China. God knows how he got this thing made. It's called 1 Second. It made $2 million this week. It's at $20 million and counting. It wouldn't be fair to end the year without talking about Tenet, the great white hope of movie box office, starring a black man, ironically enough. It made another $1 million this week. It's at $362 million and counting worldwide. So a decent amount in the rest of the world, a big disappointment in North America. It has lost a lot of money. And that's the story of the box office there, isn't it?
Yeah, you're breaking up a bit. I think wherever you're staying, you're having a
Oh, no. Is the internet not great? That's too bad. Well, we do know more movies are opening up this week. Soul and Wonder Woman 1984 are opening up in your homes in North America. Soul is coming to Disney Plus. Wonder Woman 1984 is coming to HBO Max. I know a number of people who are already talking about how they're looking forward to watching one or both of those movies on Christmas Day. That's Friday, December 25th.
None of them in theaters, though, because Wonder Woman 1984 is also in theaters.
That's right. It's also playing in theaters. And some of the people said, oh, yeah, I would have liked to see it in theaters if it was safe and easy. I'm not so sure. You make it easy for them to sit in their home and watch it for money that they've already spent on a subscription. They're already paid for HBO Max, and now you think they're really going to spend $15 just to go see it in a theater when they can see it for free in their home? That's a big ask, and you're getting people used to that. And when you do, you're creating a new habit, and I think that's very dangerous. That's what theaters think too, don't they?
That's why Warner Brothers, some people are referring to the studio as former brothers.
And by the way, HBO Max is now on Roku. They made that deal. So now it's basically available on every platform in the United States. That's a big final step for them to be available on Roku. Now they have no excuse if 6 months from now they haven't signed up everyone who has HBO to activate HBO Max. At least the people who pay for it already should be watching it and getting it up and running. But that's good news for HBO Max. It's not necessarily good news for movie theaters, but they did have some good news this week, didn't they?
Yes. Now you're talking about the relief bill. This is a coronavirus relief bill. For a while, it was called the stimulus bill.
And not I think, stimulus.
I know. I think finally the media kind of said, look, you know, Congress can call it a stimulus bill because, you know, House Republicans and
politics
and Senate Republicans want to call it a stimulus bill to kind of give it a bit of a slant. The reality is it's not stimulating anything. It's really relief. This is like a FEMA award.
Right. There's been a natural disaster of a pandemic, like a hurricane or an earthquake, and people need help through no fault of their own. Their businesses are shut down. People are out of work. They need relief. That's exactly what it is. And there's $15 billion earmarked for smaller cinemas, not the big movie theater chain.
No. It's for live event venues?
Yes.
And live cinemas?
Yes, I didn't have to be independent. What do you mean? Who said no? What do you mean? No. I hadn't finished talking. Oh, it's okay. For small cinemas, not the big movie chains and live venues like, you know, your local concert hall. And they are specifically avoiding the big ones. That's what they say. But the fine print's going to be something else, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, first of all, earlier in the week, we were talking about this before we began today's program. I had read the bill and it had been lowered to $10 billion. So who knows where we stand? It's right now, it's being reported as $15 billion. But then when I started reading some of the kind of the ways you get the money, it was very onerous and you could only get $10 million per company. You had to subtract the PPP. So at the end of the day, it's $15 billion. Let's see who can actually get it.
Right. So this is a problem. Just like the last relief bill, which happened in months and months ago, they promised and earmarked a bunch of money for small businesses all over the country. And then they made it really hard for people to collect. I'm not talking about the payment protection program, though that was a big problem too.
The paycheck protection program?
Yeah. That was different too. This was like, we're going to help small businesses. Most of the money that was handed out actually went to bigger businesses, you know, big chains like Ruth's Chris Steakhouse, who eventually gave the money back. And the small moms and pops were left standing out in the cold. Hundreds of billions of dollars wasn't even handed out. And then they said, well, we're not going to spend it. We're just going to, you know, throw it back at the Treasury rather than helping the people who desperately need it. So they're pretending to put out a lot of money. They're going to make it really hard for people to use that money. And then they're going to let the money wither and die and go back into the vault. So, you know, that's what happened last time. We have no reason to think this time will be different. That's because the Republicans and the Republican president don't want to make it easy to help people out. God knows why, because it's good for the economy when you do. When people get kicked out of their homes, it's expensive and it's not good long term. But that's what they're doing. So we're not very positive about this relief bill, are we?
No, I mean, I think, look, something had to be done. So something is better than nothing. But when you actually turn around, and I guess the best example is they're giving $600 to Americans that actually qualify for it. I haven't read what allows you to qualify. It's probably an income level that you can't surpass to get it. But to give you some sense, $600 after 8 months, yeah, thanks. I mean, it's better than nothing. It's better than a poke in the eye, but it's going to go about 4 days after.
Right. Right. Last time it was $1,200. So I guess we don't need breakfast, lunch, and dinner anymore. We can have breakfast and half of lunch. Breakfast right. and a snack. In the UK, they're having a lot of trouble too and a lot of political turmoil. There are massive lockdowns all over the country. Christmas plans are having to be canceled because the government is saying, look, we can't do this. We're having a massive spike in coronavirus, just like we are in the US. And they're saying we have to lock back down. But that isn't stopping people from planning for the future. In the West End, London's equivalent to Broadway, Les Miserables, Hamilton, Mamma Mia, all expect to return to the West End, open up with packed houses, no social distancing by May. And the Phantom of the Opera plans to open up by early June. I don't think that's going to happen, but that's their plan.
Yeah, I don't know what gives them any confidence right now.
Maybe you plan for the fall. You know, because just getting the virus out to everyone is going to take.
You mean the vaccine. The virus is already out.
The virus is everywhere. Virus is for you. You get a virus and you get a virus. And somewhat people are also getting awards, aren't they?
Yes. They gave us an award for shortest show this week, actually.
Oh, I hope so. Well, that's a little premature.
Because we're just whipping through these stories. But really what you're talking about is the New York Film Critics Society.
And the LA Film Critics Association.
Yeah, LAFCA.
Both of them have announced their best picks of the year, and I think it's pretty exciting.
Yeah, okay, so a lot of these films you're going to have to watch at home. So, for instance, the New York Film Critics Circle said First Cow wins best film. And by the way, women are the new black.
Well, women are all over this list. Once women are given a chance to make films, then they will win awards because they, just like men, they can make good films. And they're stories that haven't been told before, so they really hit hard and seem fresh and exciting because they are. So First Cow by Kelly Reichardt won Best Film from the New York Film Critics Circle. And like you say, women are all over their list. Chloe Zhao won for Nomadland. Best Screenplay was Eliza Hittman for Never Rarely, Sometimes Always. Best Foreign Language Film is the film Baccarat. Am I saying that properly?
Baccarat.
And Best Documentary is Time, a documentary that's on Amazon. So that's a fun list. You've got a link in our show notes to that. But the LA Film Critics, they were even bolder, weren't they?
Yes, they said, you know what? A project premiered at film festival, Small Axe by Steve McQueen. We're considering a film. It's now on Prime Video. You can watch it. I think it just premiered last week. And they said Best Picture for that. Now it's a picture in five parts, I think five or six or seven parts. You know, it's kind of an anthology.
Like Krzysztof Kozlowski's Decalogue, which played in movie theaters technically. So that's why some people awarded it Best Film of the Year. Some people picked out one or two episodes that were the longest. They were close to feature length. And they said, oh, that's our Best Film of the Year. Some people in my film group, we just changed our rules to accommodate stuff like this. Someone said, hey, do you think Mangrove, which is the longest piece, I think, in the five-part Small Axe work. So do you think that will be considered Best Film of the Year, or do you think Small Axe as a whole? And I said, whatever you want to support. See what other people are doing. If you're happy to support the whole project, if other people are too, do that. If you think Mangrove stands head and shoulder above the others, and that's the worst set, you know, singling out, well, push for that. But yes, I think this is a bold pick. It's basically a TV miniseries. Let's not muck around. That's what it is. It's played on British television and Amazon Prime in the US. And it's the boldest pick by the LA Film Critics, I would say, since they named Brazil the best film of the year. That was a movie by Terry Gilliam that its own studio wouldn't even release. They were fighting with him. The LA Film Critics saw a pirated copy and said, you know what? This is the best film of the year. A movie nobody had seen. So that's pretty bold. And now they're talking about TV. So those walls and worrying about whether it's on HBO Max or Netflix or Amazon Prime, that's over with. That battle is over.
And, you know, I know that we could keep going down. I mean, what's remarkable to me, the one area they both agreed on is Time, Best Documentary. I mean, documentary this year is a tough category.
Right. A lot of people have named Collective one of the best films of the year. That was the runner-up.
One of the best films of the year. 100%. Yes.
Absolutely. And that was named by the LA Film Critics as their runner-up. So lots of good stuff in those lists. You can check them out. Best Animated Film, Wolfwalkers. That's playing on Apple TV. Whereas Soul, the runner-up, will be playing on Disney Plus come Christmas Day. That's just the world we live in. But I think there's a lot of good movies on these lists. I'm looking forward to seeing a lot of them. And I wouldn't feel right about naming them a best of the year list until I did see them.
Now, did you ever see the play Outside Mullinger?
Yes.
John Sayles? And what did you think of that? Because I just saw the film that it was based, you know, that's based on.
Right. It wasn't a good play. I didn't mind seeing it, but it wasn't good.
Okay. I thought the play was different than Wild Mountain Time, but enjoyed Wild Mountain Time for what it was.
Was it a good film? Is it one of your best of the year?
Oh, no. No.
Okay.
No.
Yeah. Well, there you go. That sounds about right. So people aren't lining up to see Wild Mountain Time, nor are they lining up for the Academy Museum. Hey, I had a joke for that one, too. The people standing outside waiting in line to go see the Academy Museum when it opens up, they're singing Baby It's Cold Outside because they're going to be waiting in line a lot longer. The opening of the Academy Museum has been delayed again, this time till fall of 2021. That seems somewhat reasonable, especially since you can limit capacity pretty easily to a museum. Maybe that will happen. Let's hope so. We know a lot of other stuff is going to happen. We haven't talked about reboots and remakes in a little while, but the last 2 weeks, there were just so many. We went, really? My God. That I thought we'd mention it again.
Well, especially when some of them are like Night Court is being rebooted with John Larroquette. Did anybody ask for that? That's no dig on John Larroquette, but why couldn't he be a part of a new original series?
Well, nobody's waiting for a Night Court reboot, and it's not going to have, it's going to be the daughter of the judge who was on the show. That's the spin on it. LA Law is coming back with Blair Underwood, who looks damn good. As one friend said, he aged better than the TV show because LA Law was once one of the most highly touted TV shows on television. It hasn't held up well at all. It looks pretty cheesy and, you know, schlocky in comparison to, say, to something like, oh, I don't know, Hill Street Blues or Upstairs, Downstairs. I don't think LA Law has really stood the test of time. ER, that looks better than LA Law. But you know what? Blair Underwood, isn't Jimmy Smith available as well? Surely he'd appear on the show.
Well, but you know what? He wants to do it just like he did in the original, where he came in after the show had started. He wasn't there at the start.
Oh, well,
I don't think. I could be wrong about that. Now I'm wondering.
You better look that up while I talk about Little House on the Prairie. That's been rebooted before, both as a movie and a TV show. There was a miniseries that was a little more serious and darker than the original wholesome family entertainment. But it's a solid property. I think that makes sense as a remake, especially since you can be more inclusive and more aware of all the troubled history of Laura Ingalls Wilder and her attitude towards Indigenous Americans and the conquering of the West, rather than, oh, look, there's all this empty territory. But finally, there's All My Children. This one I'm intrigued by. It's All My Children, the daytime soap for ABC. It's coming to prime time. Kelly Ripa and her husband, Mark Consuelos, are involved in producing it. They acted on the TV show. They met on the TV show where their characters fell in love. And then they fell in love and got married and have been living happily ever after. Now they're rebooting All My Children for prime time. I said, you know what? That actually makes sense to me. That could work, except they're renaming it Pine Valley. And they're giving it some crazy little like dark Twin Peaks like attitude towards it, where a private investigator or journalist is coming in to dig up dark secrets in Pine Valley. That's the town where the show is set. To which I say, A, don't make it dark and crazy. Just make All My Children. And B, call it All My Children, because that's a valuable name. Why give it up?
And now, okay, I stand corrected. Jimmy Smits was a part of the original cast of LA Law.
Right, and Harry Hamlin was supposed to be the hot stud, but Blair Underwood and Jimmy Smits were getting all the hubba of attention from people who were like, wow, those guys are really appealing. Not that they dissed Harry Hamlin, but
Corbin Burnson?
Oh, yeah, well, he wasn't supposed to be the hot stud, though. He wasn't known like the way Harry Hamlin was. You know, Harry Hamlin was presented as the bohunk star. You know, that was the idea. Corbin Burnson certainly had his fans as well. A lot of good-looking men on that show. Plus, the Venus Butterfly. That was a show that was a big hit in the Nielsen ratings for sure. I mean, for years. Oh yes, it was a monster hit after the critical success of Hill Street Blues, which ultimately slipped into the top 10 briefly one season, I believe, maybe just the top 20. LA Law took over that time slot on Thursday night at 10 p.m. Those were the days when time slots and what channel you were on and the time and what show came before it, all that stuff really mattered. Today, kids are like, what are you talking about? But it was a big hit right from the start in the Nielsen top 10. And we do have some Nielsen numbers for the top 10 streaming shows for mid-November. This is the week of November 16th.
That's how far behind Nielsen is in this.
They're not far behind. It just takes a few weeks to add it up. If it takes a few weeks to add it up, you're not behind. You're just doing it when you can. You have to wait a few weeks to get all the numbers because people need weeks in order to watch it. So The Crown, for example, that's the number one show. Because a new season dropped, season 4, it was watched a lot. How much? 2/3 of the viewing was for season 4, but that means a lot of other people, 1/3 of them, were catching up on seasons 1, 2, and 3. 3.36 billion minutes were viewed. That's a lot, and it's a new record according to this half-assed analysis that we have. Nielsen's doing the best job it can, but the channels don't want to cooperate. They're not making it easy, and therefore they complain and say these numbers aren't accurate. They don't capture everything. And Nielsen's like, well, let us capture everything. Let us give an actual thing. But The Queen's Gambit is on the list, The Office, The Mandalorian, of course. And the one new show is, wait, I'm not sure there is any new show
Boss
on here.
Boss Baby, maybe?
I think Boss Baby jumped up and down on there before. Maybe it is new, but they're all Netflix except for one show from Disney Plus, The Mandalorian.
British baking show?
Yeah, oh yeah, that's been, you know, they've had holiday baking episodes and a new season dropped. So yeah, that's why people have been watching that. I watched it with my mom a little bit. So here's the big news in Nielsen streaming and Nielsen ratings overall. They are overhauling their TV ratings system. They are desperate to capture eyeballs wherever they are. They're completely revamping their system. They're going to do everything they can. They promise to start in 2022 and complete it in 2024. To which I say, why the hell weren't you doing this 5 years ago?
Yeah, what? Like, okay.
Maybe there were technical barriers. Maybe there were things, but this is long overdue. And again, why aren't you starting in 2021 and getting done in 2023? Surely,
or better yet, starting in 2021 and getting done in 2021, they could get a vaccine in under a year. What's taking you so long?
There must be some. I mean, one can assume that pandemic has made it harder for them to rotate and switch and pivot to this newer system.
There are probably some contractual issues, actually.
There may be contractual issues. Hey, if you're with Nielsen and you've got a story to tell, reach out to us. Or if you know the dish, let us know.
Yes, you can write to us, dirt@showbizsandbox.com. That's dirt@showbizsandbox.com. Or you can call and leave us a voicemail. The number to call is 888-567-SAND. That's 888-567-7263. You can also reach out to us on Twitter, @showbizsandbox is our handle. And we're on Facebook, facebook.com/showbizsandbox is where you can like our page.
Well, that's you know, the big news we have. I think it's a big deal that we covered it all so quickly and strongly.
Oh, okay. I see what you're trying to do there. Wow, you really, I think Michael has someplace to go today in Atlanta because he's just like whipping through these stories. But since you did mention Big Deal, then it must be time for Big Deal or Big Whoop, our weekly segment where we discuss the top headlines in entertainment and tell you whether they're really important or just overhyped nonsense. Our first story, the Russo brothers directed the Avengers Endgame. That was a big deal when it
happened. Yes, it was.
It's the highest grossing film of all time. But when they actually needed cash and a cash infusion for their company amidst the pandemic, the brothers, they needed some help. So they turned to Saudi Arabia. That would be the country, by the way, which killed and dismembered a journalist for the Washington Post. They didn't do it for the Washington Post, but he was a Washington Post journalist. And then they kind of shrugged off all that international outcry. I mean, it was a documentary at Sundance this past year. And while the initial firestorm over the slaughter of a journalist approved by the country's de facto leader, or ruler, Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman, led to Endeavor returning a $400 million investment, few others followed suit. Big chunks of Disney and Live Nation are owned by the country's sovereign wealth fund. AMC, the movie theater chain, is happily building movie theaters there. Not so many. They have one. And we first read this story in Variety, by the way, whose parent company is PMC, in which a Saudi publishing and media company has a minority stake. So is this a big deal or a big whoop?
It's a big whoop, isn't it? Because nobody will care. The Russo brothers couldn't get money from anybody else in the world. The guys who just directed the highest grossing film of all time had to go to what choice did we have? Really? That's where they had to go. And everybody in Hollywood does this and nobody cares. So it's a big whoop, unfortunately.
Yeah, I mean, there was a brief moment in time right after the killing of...
where people pretended to care. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, Khashoggi. And they pretended to care. There was, you know, there was supposed to be a Palm Springs art show that was being sponsored by Saudi Arabia. And
they canceled an art show. Good heavens. And some people canceled their attendance at a conference in Saudi Arabia. They refused to go to that Middle Eastern conference.
When we said at the time, eventually everybody will just go back to normal. And that's exactly what seems to have happened.
Yeah.
Big news on the music charts. I paused because I was like, he's not going to sing for that. Okay. Mariah Carey, by the way, back at number one this holiday season with her Spectorian. I don't know what Spectorian.
Phil Spector, Spectorian single. All I Want for Christmas Is You.
Okay. Because you know, that wall of sound.
Yep.
Okay.
Exactly. Well done.
It finally hit number one last December, and now it's returned to the top of the charts, putting it in the same company as Bing Crosby's White Christmas and Chubby Checker's The Twist, two other songs that repeated at number one. Bing did it several times, by the way, hitting number one in 1942, 1945, and 1946. He hit the top 40 with Irving Berlin's classic 13 times in all, most recently in 2018. That's White Christmas, of course. More good news, by the way. Jose Feliciano finally hits the top 10 with Feliz Navidad. Felicidades, Jose. Oh, I see. I was like, wait, that's, you spelled something wrong here. No, you're saying
congratulations.
Yeah. On the album charts, Taylor Swift hit number one with her second surprise album of the year. By the way.
OMG.
When every album is a surprise album, can we just say it's another album? You're working on an album. You released it. Okay. Every one of your albums is a... This is a surprise. So just that would get
be
over
the,
it.
That would be the folk-tinged Evermore? Or is
yes.
it Never? Yes. All right.
It's Evermore. And you know, she's going to release albums forevermore. She hits number one with 8 albums now. One behind Madonna and 3 behind Barbara Streisand's record for women at 11. So is this a, you know, why women? Why are we doing? Anyway, big deal or big whoop?
Said the white man. it's a big deal for this reason. Taylor Swift sold the equivalent of 329,000 copies in the U.S. and 1 million worldwide. About 150,000 of them were actual album sales, both digital and physical. The rest were streaming, but it's the biggest debut total since Billboard stopped including ticket and merchandise bundles. So like, you know what? That's gotten out of control. We're not going to count that anymore. So this is a big deal because it's real sales. It's real stuff happening. And it's great to see. And I think that was a smart adjustment to the chart. And also her song, Willow, that just debuted at number one on the Hot 100. That just broke a few minutes ago. So she's now at number one with a debut single and a debut album. The new album and single both debuted at the top of the charts. She's the only artist to ever do this. She did it earlier this year with her last album, and now she's done it again. So
you know what Taylor Swift calls all that?
Tuesday.
Oh, you stole my punchline. I was going to say Monday.
It should have been Friday because the stuff drops Thursday nights, but there you go.
Oh, that's funny. Okay, well, this news story, actually, the next one, is probably one of the bigger stories of the week, if not the year, because mm-hmm. you know, a flop, really, it's a terrible thing to see. A studio can spend hundreds of millions of dollars to make and market a movie only to have opening weekend be greeted by crickets, sometimes grasshoppers. Empty theaters and bad reviews. A TV show drops and keeps dropping. An album is released and no one streams it. And then there's the video game Cyberpunk 2077. Everybody was, you know, the pre-orders on this were through the roof. The Sony game was hyped as the game of the year. And they're right. Unfortunately, the year is 2020. Okay, so the game is exactly what this year deserves. Both Sony and Microsoft offered refunds after 1 week of release for the multiplayer game, which has been plagued by glitches and bugs and thus terrible reviews. Its maker, CD Projekt Red, had boasted of 8 million pre-sales, as I mentioned, for the $60 game. That's about $500 million in sales before it launched. Okay, this is a game 8 years in the making. Okay. So for the movie folk, that's $500 million.
It's a lot of money.
$500 million. Now it's boasting about how fast they're going to fix all the problems and make it awesome again for the first time. Big deal or big whoop?
Well, I think it's a big whoop. Things fail. Not every video game or movie or TV show is going to work. I don't think there's anything systemic here that we can point to that this illustrates some systemic problem in the industry. There's obviously a big problem of crashing a game really quick before the end, people having to work 80, 90 hour weeks for 6 months in a row before the final release happens. The big problem that they did here was that they didn't check out enough on how it would play on older consoles. That was a big problem. Though really, people with new consoles aren't raving about it either, but the backwards compatibility was really a big problem. So that's a bad thing, since most people obviously have the older consoles. The new ones are just come out like a week ago. So that's the biggest problem here. If there's any other systemic issue, I'm not aware of it. It just seems like they were making a big game and it fell flat on its face. It happens.
Yeah, I mean, they were working towards the release of the PS5 and the next Xbox. They had been touting this since 2012 was when they first started it. Keanu Reeves was in the trailer. And
that's how long it takes to do a video. You know, it can take many years to do a video game. So it takes 3-4 years to make a movie, right? Avatar, anybody? Let's hope to God for Disney with those theme parks and others that it's not doesn't turn out to be, you know, the Matrix 2 and 3 of its day.
Oof, yeah, well, you know.
Never count out James Cameron.
Yeah, that's true. Although it takes years to make a movie, it takes years to get a deal done, too, to make movies, which is why you need an agent to get it done. See what I did there? I'm moving us into inside baseball.
Oh, you're skipping Dore Iman.
What?
You're skipping the last big deal, big whoop.
Oh, rewind. I totally did not see this news story. Okay, so the Japanese cartoon Doraemon?
Doraemon. I should have looked that up. I apologize to everyone in Japan.
And in China, where a film version is in theaters right now. But one scene bothered a Japanese parent. It shows a major character sneaking into a bathroom when a female character is in the bathroom already. We don't know the context at all, but the parent felt it modeled poor, you know, kind of even creepy behavior, and it should be cut. Thanks to the internet, fans in China heard about the protest and also weighed in on the petition. It's a small world, after all, even though China's a big country. Is this a big deal or a big whoop?
Well, it's a big whoop, but we talk about the soft power of culture, the soft power of how that works and influencing people all over the world, and it can bring people together. Everybody in the world who wanted to saw the Avengers Endgame and learned a lesson that the filmmakers Russo brothers should learn from their own movie about banding together to fight bad people.
But yeah, well, don't snap your fingers. You know, that's what I learned.
The parents in China apparently complained about the scene and it didn't gain any traction. It was sort of poo-pooed. But when a campaign in Japan caught fire, the people in China caught wind of it on the internet and they started to champion it too. So now there's an online petition and people are talking about it. And so that's kind of cool. People can work together. I don't understand the scene or the context. It sounds creepy and bad and wrong for a children's cartoon. You know, that's not amusing. So good for them to catch that. But there can be all sorts of cross-cultural confusions along with the positive stuff of people reaching out and connecting and having the same attitude towards a movie or a book or a TV show, even if it's good or bad. Like, look at Monster Hunter. We finally got some clarity on what was going on there. This movie, the China's Film Board pulled out of theaters because they said, oh, there was a scene that was offensive to people. Now they've changed their policy. They're going to take a second look at imported films, possibly delaying releases and hurting box office. So that's a big pain in the neck because they already had really stringent and difficult censoring to get over. But nonetheless, we were going, what is the problem with this stupid pun in the movie? And now we've learned the reason. Apparently, it's linked to a schoolyard taunt that kids would hear in America. I'm not in anywhere else as far as I know, but it was a taunt making fun of people of Asian descent. In the movie, a character says, hey, look at my knees. And the other guy says, what knees are those? And he says, Chinese. It just sounds like a stupid pun you might hear in an airplane, but it echoes something that some kids of Asian descent heard in schoolyards in America. We apologize for anyone we might offend repeating this, but we've talked about it so much we wanted to be explicit about what was said. The chant, pretty dumb, is just Chinese, Japanese, dirty knees. Look at these Chinese, Japanese, dirty knees. In terms of taunts, that's pretty lame. So any kid using it is kind of a jerk anyway. And kind of.
But think about it. I'm sure the writers of this film and the filmmakers didn't even know that taunt existed.
Yes, perhaps they didn't. It's on Wikipedia. But you're saying that because you're not Chinese or Japanese and you're not from America, right?
I am from America. But
you're not Chinese and Japanese from living, growing up in America.
Yes, correct.
I certainly never heard this taunt done. But now we can understand, okay, this echoes for some people. I'm not sure how people in China heard about this, but apparently they have. They are aware of it. It's listed in Wikipedia as this obnoxious schoolyard taunt. And now we can finally understand, okay, yeah, and now I get it. That sort of echoes this taunt that people of some Asian descent had to listen to in schoolyards. They shouldn't have had to listen to that as kids. They don't want to hear it echoed in a film. It clearly is an innocent mistake. They weren't trying to echo that. You would hope if they cut out the clip out the moment that everybody would be fine and they could move on. It surely wouldn't slow down the movie's plot.
So, well, and this is where digital could actually, mm-hmm. I wonder if they could do that in a DCP where they
Why not? Set on a new print in 2 minutes?
Yeah. Well, no, actually take the print that's there, put another CPL out, a playlist out, because basically the playlist is just saying, play this image, play this image, play the, and it's doing it, you know, thousands and millions of times over the course. So I just wonder if they could just say, don't play that segment.
Right. If you want to cut or add a scene, wouldn't you just release a new print of the movie and send it out everywhere?
Well, that's the other way to do it. Yes.
Yeah. But again, it's very easy to do compared to the old days when you'd have to get the actual negative and snip and cut it.
Right.
So this is a much easier fix. Hopefully people will understand it was not meant to echo that. They thought they were making a bad pun, not echoing an obnoxious, hateful insult. Sorry to anybody who ever had to hear that growing up. I never heard it. You know, god awful. You know, never heard anybody doing anything like that. But again, I went to a Catholic school with basically all white people. So not a lot of chance for the ethnic slurs.
Well, now it is indeed time for Inside Baseball, where we analyze some of the headlines that have the entertainment industry buzzing. We'll explain what they mean for the business and, more importantly, how they affect you. I don't know that this story really affects our listeners too much unless
this has held the industry in a standstill.
We do actually have listeners who are members of the WGA. So
and agents.
That's
and managers.
True. Yeah, true. So actually, it's going to affect every single one. Listen up. This is important stuff here.
After almost 2 years, the Creative Artists Agency has agreed to a new deal with the Writers Guild of America that radically restructures its business. As with all the other agreements, packaging and ownership of production companies are being ended or scaled way back. CAA has agreed to sell off their stake in a production company down to 20%.
Yes.
And also, we've learned that there's a new codicil saying that the owners of CAA, TPG, like the WGA said, hey, don't get cute. You can't set up some other entity to form or invest in production companies as a workaround. Not going to pull any of that stuff. We're going to be paying attention. And of course, if they don't off by the agreed deadline, which we're not aware of the time frame, we assume it's a year and a half or 2 years, something like that, then there will be big penalties to pay. That means the William & Morris Endeavor is the last agency standing. A judge has urged them both to come to an agreement. William & Morris Endeavor said, hey, we haven't even seen the agreement that CAA has agreed to, so give us a chance to find out what's in it. How can we agree?
Yeah,
to, I mean, we know what they're asking us to do, but we don't know what CAA agreed to. And, you know, cut us some slack here, buddy.
Yeah. And basically, anything that CAA agreed to, all of the other agencies will get because it's being done on a most favored nations. And I think, you know, CAA's big problem was, look, we agreed to all this. Oh, you want this one more thing? I think basically it was just one more thing they wanted, which was this don't be cute thing and a timeline on.
There always had to be a timeline for when they would, you know, scale back their investment in a production company to 20% or less. There always had to be a timeline. So that is not a new request from WGA. We've gotten some pushback from some of our listeners who say that the WGA has been horrible. They've been unreasonable. They've been sloppy and unprofessional. They do seem like they're being vindictive. We've pored over the news stories that we see. I can't find any example of what CAA asked for that was a new concession. As far as we can tell, they seem to have agreed to the same terms as other people. I don't believe the WGA said, yeah, we don't want to agree with you. Of course, they wanted to sign the deal. But we're looking to find out, is there some new concession by the WGA that helped CAA say yes? If there is, we don't know it. The only new thing we can see is the thing that the WGA got as a concession from CAA about their parent company, saying you can't do this cute workaround. Don't play games with us. So we're open to hearing any info people have. Presumably more will come out. But as far as we know, the CAA basically signed on to what everyone else was doing, and now they actually have an agreement. The Writers Guild of America confirms it. We're glad, whatever the terms are, assuming that they're equitable and fair for both parties. It is a massive change to the industry. There's still a lot of money being made in packaging. Ownership of production companies was growing. This conflict of interest that all these agents were facing is they were both the owner and the agent for their writers. That's been scaled way back. So this isn't like some, oh, well, they finally both just got tired of fighting. This is a big change in the industry.
And I think this is going to avoid another MCA situation where, you know, they were making films and, well, I guess mostly films, and representing the artists and distributing them to movie, you know, so I think it's going to, and that was MCA. Yeah. That was, you know, that's how Universal got started. Not how it got started, but, you know, they were involved in it. So, you know, ultimately, look, there's all this vertical integration is occurring. It's occurring on the studio side. Nobody's preventing it there, where literally Comcast can not only own the production company, but the means of getting the content to you, i.e. the cable company, and the content itself, and the way, you know, just one thing after another.
So the WGA was sort of fighting last year's battle. Is that what you think? They won last battle and there's a new battle looming?
Well, I think the battle will be how talent gets paid and whether there's any back end at all.
How you measure it. Right, exactly. How do you measure a success? In the old days, it was sold off into syndication for a TV show or big ratings. For a movie, it was box office. Now, what do you do with Wonder Woman 1984? Unless you say, all right, here's an extra $10 million because we're putting it to HBO Max. That's what they did for Wonder Woman 1984 for the director and the star. But all their other movies, they just said, yeah, don't worry about that.
Yeah, well, and I think they're going to learn the hard way. Yeah, they're going to have to actually pony up some cash because that's the way those deals were cut.
Right, but it's going to be a really hard battle. Who decides how much? You know, everybody's going to say, well, my movie would have grossed $800 million. And HBO Max says, well, no, it wouldn't.
Here's where the whole, you know, there's no new ideas thing might actually hurt them because all of them are sequels and remakes. So they can actually go back to the originals and say, well, the first film made $800 million.
That's a good point.
This film could have made $700 to $900 million. So we'll just price it there, which means you would have gotten your $2 million bonus.
Right.
So here, you know, so that's.
Explain to us why you decided to make a sequel you thought would make less than the original.
Exactly.
Yeah, so that's a great point to be made that I'm sure that will be brought up in court or among their lawyers before they have to go to court. We don't know what the deal is with CAA and WGA. We look forward to getting more information. We're perfectly willing to believe that the WGA was sloppy and obnoxious and didn't do everything they should and was difficult to deal with. We're perfectly willing to believe CAA did the same stuff. We're waiting to see the details. If you've got any details to share with us, great. That battle is going on, but some battles have ended. That would be the people who have died that we've moved on to our obituary section. And we've got two people to talk about and a call back to Jean Le Carré. Anne Rankine, the Tony winner. She died at the age of 71. She was an actor, a dancer, a choreographer. She was in the original cast of Cabaret in 1969.
Also Sweet Charity.
She was also in Sweet Charity. That's right. Then she starred in Chicago in the 1970s. She took over the part of Roxy Hart from original star Gwen Verdon and performed opposite Cheetah Rivera. Then she played Roxy again in the historic 1996 revival opposite the ageless Cheetah Rivera, who's still alive. That show is still running. Only Phantom of the Opera has run longer on Broadway in all of history. Phantom of the Opera is the longest running show in history. Chicago is the second longest running show on Broadway in all of history. Play, musical, you name it. It's certainly the biggest revival of all time. And Anne Rankine wasn't done. She also co-created, co-directed, and co-choreographed Fosse, the tribute to Bob Fosse, the director of Cabaret and Chicago. That was her last bow on Broadway. She was theater to her bones. You know, this was not someone who was ever going to really become a big TV or movie star. She just had the theater in her bones, and that was all she wanted to do, and she did it well.
And also, Oscar-winning production designer Peter Lamont died at the age of 91. I guess he won the Oscar for Titanic, if I'm not mistaken.
That's right. That's right.
I could read here too. Yeah,
he was a long-term collaborator with Peter Ford and some other people that he had long-term collaborations with. Lamont worked as an art director, a set director, a production designer. He did win the Oscar for art direction of Titanic, while Ford won for set decoration. I love these stories sometimes. Peter Lamont began as a print boy runner at Pinewood Studios in the UK. You're right at the bottom as a kid, you know, and he worked his way up to winning the Oscar decades later. I think that's awesome. That's really cool. Other big titles for him, The 7% Solution, Fiddler on the Roof, Aliens, This Sporting Life, Chitty Chitty Bang Bang, The Ipcress
Files.
This
is the second week in a row where we've had somebody pass away who worked on Chitty Chitty Bang
That's
Bang.
That's right.
If I was in that film or worked on it, I'd be looking over my shoulder this week.
There was a soap star who was also in the original cast of Cabaret. She played a secondary role, and I didn't include her here. My apologies for that. But most of all, Peter Lamont and Ford, to a degree, worked on most every James Bond film from Goldfinger through Casino Royale. Decades of work on the James Bond films. The only reason they missed Tomorrow Never Dies was because they were working on Titanic. And his
and they were probably supposed to be done by then. Exactly. And then James Cameron was like, "We're still shooting."
His son Neil is an art director, most notably on the Harry Potter films. So the family tradition continues. Our sympathies for his family and friends. A pretty cool career. And if you're a James Bond fan, that man has made his imprint on you. He did the Fort Knox production design set for Goldfinger, and then they loved what he did, and he went on from there. And
well, you have a little follow-up here to John Le Carré, who died last week at the age of 89.
That's right. We had to breeze past him because we were way over long. And I wanted to remind people, he is one of my favorite examples of an author. I would have bought one of his books years ago, but publishers switched to trade paperbacks. They decided decades ago, oh, people don't want to buy a mass market paperback. They want to pay twice as much for a trade paperback because it's bigger, bulkier, and more expensive. Gee, great. Thank you. And that's been a problem. We're talking about Jean Le Carré. His famed trilogy is the Smiley Trilogy, which begins with Tinker, Tailor, Soldier, Spy. If you go into a bookstore today to buy a copy of it, it's going to cost you like $17 for a paperback. It's 50 years old, getting on 60 years old. And they want you to buy all three of them. Or frankly, there are 9 novels by Le Carré that feature George Smiley one way or another. So they really want you to buy all 9 books, but they want you to pay about $17, $18 for them. So they want you to pay $140, $150 for books that are 30, 40, 50, 60 years old. That's bonkers. The same thing happens with the Aubrey Maturin books by Patrick O'Brien. They're coming out with new ugly covers. These covers are ugly.
Oh, wait. This is the Master and Commander?
That's right. The mm-hmm. Commander, the Far Side of the World movie. You might know that's a great film with Russell Crowe. And the books are tremendous. There's like 21 or 22 in all. They're a great series, just like the Jean Le Carré novels. And again, 40, 50, 60 years, and they're $16 each. It's just crazy. I don't get it. It's a big, big mistake by the publishing industry, but they would say they made a lot of money and people love the classy trade paperback. I say bollocks. People want portability and affordability. Why would they not?
And they want to listen to our show each and every week, except for next week, we will not have a show. And possibly the week after that, we have to see how much news actually happens. But this is our last show of the year. And if you want to know when we come back next year, definitely subscribe to us in iTunes, the Google Play Store, Microsoft Marketplace, Stitcher, and now Spotify. Finally.
Is it really?
Yes.
I looked you 2 weeks ago. You said it's on Spotify. I'm like, really? And I looked at it.
And then
wasn't
it disappeared. Yeah, it disappeared, and then I was there again, then it disappeared, so I'm hoping that it's still there.
There it is! Showbiz Sandbox! Yeah.
Okay, so we're checking live.
Follow me. Finally, Lord Almighty, that was a bear to get happen. And now the money will come pouring in. Wait.
That's right. As a matter of fact, you can send your checks
How much did they pay us to have us join the Spotify family?
Carry
the 2, add the 4, plus the 3, and nothing. Yeah.
And we owe them money.
Probably. You've got to get a charity button, for God's sake. The donate buttons, bro. Is that your 2021 resolution? A donate
yes, actually
now button?
It is.
Okay, but let's not wait till December of 2021 to make it happen.
Okay, well, in the meantime, while you're quarantining for Christmas, please do subscribe to our show in any one of those podcast aggregators. Rate and review our show. It helps us out when you do. Ways to subscribe to us are on our website, showbizsandbox.com. That's where you'll find links to all of the stories we discussed on today's episode, as well as ways to email us, dirt@showbizsandbox.com. That's dirt@showbizsandbox.com. You can also call and leave us a voicemail. 888-567-SAND is our voicemail. That's 888-567-7263. Feel free to call and just leave us a random voicemail. You know what? Maybe we'll play it on the show. Probably will, actually. We're also on Twitter. @showbizsandbox is our handle there. And we do actually converse with people back and forth. So please do reach out to us there. Facebook.com/showbizsandbox is where you can like our Facebook page. And we do respond to messages there as well. All that information is on our website. Who is Showbiz Sandbox? No, showbizsandbox.com. I was getting ahead of myself because what I was referring to was MGMT. They're responsible for the music that you hear at the beginning and end of each show. And they can be found on their own website, whoismgmt.com. In fact, last week I fell down a YouTube rabbit hole where I found all of these videos of MGMT cutting their first album.
Cool.
And like they were so cute, you know, like they were like, oh, remember that or Oracular Spectacular when they were like, I wonder if this will work or that will work. And you're like, actually, it most certainly will.
Should we make a video? Yes. Yes, you should.
Yes. So like, it's pretty remarkable. Anyway, you know what? While they can be found on whoismgmt.com, Michael, you're on the internet and every week you have a new and exciting website for us. What is it this week, Michael?
This week it's thanksforlistening.com. Seriously, thank you for listening. Please rate and review. You don't always do it, but that's okay. But we really appreciate you listening and sharing the show with your friends and family. We really do. It means a lot.
Well, and you know what? If you can't find any of Michael's coverage of the entertainment industry there.
.com.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Okay. Well, why not head on over to michaelgiltz.com while you're at it? Of course, that's where all of Michael's work is aggregated. Some of my work can be found on celluloidjunkie.com. Until next year, play nice.